Welcome to Barry Pirro's Haunted Happenings podcast, where I share in-depth stories of the paranormal, the supernatural, and the unexplained. So turn off your lights, sit back, and prepare to be scared. Haunted Happenings listeners, have I got a treat for you. My new book, Haunted Happenings, A Ghost Hunter's Strangest Cases, is now available exclusively online at my website, ConnecticutGhostHunter.com. You may not be aware of it, but I'm one of the busiest and most sought-after paranormal investigators in the New York and Connecticut area. In my book, I share the stories of 8 of my most intriguing and frightening paranormal cases. Find out what it's really like to live in a haunted house, and read about my run-ins with ghosts, demons, poltergeists, and doppelgangers. Head on over to ConnecticutGhostHunter.com to get your copy today. For more information, please visit the program notes. Now, if you're prepared to be scared, come with me as I take a deep dive into the world of the mysterious Men in Black. It was September 11th, 1976, and Dr. Herbert Hopkins was alone in his home in Orchard Beach, Maine. Hopkins was a general practitioner who was also a skilled hypnotist, and he had recently been working with a man named David Stevens. In October of 1975, Stevens began complaining about a period of missing time after seeing strange lights in the sky one night, and Hopkins had been using regression therapy to help the man remember a period of lost time that occurred that night. Just as he was about to get up and get a snack from the kitchen, the phone rang. "Hello," Dr. Hopkins said.
"Dr. Hopkins, it is with great pleasure that I make your acquaintance. I am the vice president of the New Jersey UFO Research Organization, and I wish to speak to you of the UFO abduction case you are currently working on. There is much to discuss of great importance, but I promise to take very little of your time. Can we meet?"
Hopkins was puzzled by the call, but for some reason he said, "Sure, I'd be happy to meet with you to discuss the case." But before he was able to ask the man's name, there was a click on the other end and the call went to dial tone. Hopkins would later reflect how out of character it was for him to so quickly agree to share the case with this complete stranger. But for some reason, this simply didn't occur to him at the time. Hopkins hung up the phone, then walked over to the front door. He didn't know when his visitor would arrive, but it was already dark out, so he turned on the outside light so the man wouldn't have to walk up to a dark house. But to Hopkins' total astonishment, the man was already making his way up the porch steps. When Hopkins opened the door, the man introduced himself as the person who had just called. Now, this was really strange since there were no payphones nearby, and when Hopkins looked over the man's shoulder, there was no sign of a car. The stranger was extremely odd-looking. He wore a black Homburg-style hat, the type men wore in the 1940s and 50s, was extremely thin, and his skin was deathly white. His razor-thin lips looked odd, and upon further inspection, Hopkins could see that he was wearing red lipstick. As for his attire, the man was dressed in a black suit, black tie, gray suede gloves, and a gleaming white shirt. Everything the stranger wore was immaculate and precisely pressed, but the suit was way too big on him. Hopkins would later say that his first thought was that he looked like an undertaker. Well, for some inexplicable reason, the doctor wasn't put off by any of this. He simply greeted the man, then invited him into his house. When the man sat down and took off his hat, Hopkins was surprised to see that not only was he bald, he had no eyebrows or eyelashes. Hopkins' dog came into the room and saw the man, and it barked furiously at him before running off with its tail between its legs. It ended up hiding in a closet for the remainder of the man's visit. The two sat talking for some time about the details of the abduction case. Then at one point, the conversation strayed to other UFO cases. The man told Dr. Hopkins that UFO abductee Barney Hill died because he knew too much about UFOs, and he warned Hopkins that unless he destroyed all of his UFO-related tapes and correspondences, he would suffer the same fate as Barney Hill. Now, for those who aren't familiar with the Hills case, Betty and Barney Hill were a couple who claimed that they had been abducted by aliens in 1961. They wrote about their experience in the 1966 book Interrupted Journey. 3 years after the publication of the book, Barney died of a cerebral hemorrhage when he was just 46 years old. Some maintain that the circumstances of his death were suspicious, considering his young age and apparent good health. The strange man sat ramrod straight on the couch and stared unblinking at Dr. Hopkins. He then warned the doctor that he would definitely know if he had followed his instructions or not. Toward the end of their conversation, Hopkins noticed something odd. The man's speech seemed to be slowing down, and his movements were becoming increasingly unsteady. Without saying a word, the man suddenly rose to leave, then walked to the front door. When he got there, he turned to Hopkins and said,
"My energy is running low. Must go now. Goodbye."
As the man staggered out the door, he seemed to be in serious physical trouble. Hopkins watched him cling to the railing as he made his way down the steps. It was only after his guest had lurched off into the night that Hopkins found himself shaken, recognizing at last how absolutely strange the whole thing was. By the time his wife and children arrived home, he was in a state of panic. After telling them what had just happened, he demagnetized all of the tapes of the interviews he had conducted with David Stevens. But this didn't seem like enough, so he threw them into the fireplace. Then he threw all of his notes from the case into the fire and watched them burn. For weeks afterward, the family would experience widespread telephone interference. Hopkins would later come to his senses and realize what a bizarre experience he had had that night. He would also discover that there was no such thing as the New Jersey UFO Research Organization. Who was this strange man who paid Dr. Hopkins a visit in the dead of night? He was one of the infamous Men in Black. Most of us know the term Men in Black from the 1997 Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones movie of the same name. But few know that the film was based on a 1990 comic book called, you guessed it, Men in Black, written by Lowell Cunningham and illustrated by Sandy Carruthers. Cunningham came up with the idea for the comic after a friend of his shared an experience of seeing a mysterious-looking black van slowly riding around his neighborhood. In the comic, the Men in Black is an international intelligence organization that oversees and investigates paranormal activity, including aliens, demons, mutants, zombies, werewolves, vampires, and other beings. In order to keep their investigations secret, the Men in Black have the ability to erase the memory of anyone who interacts with the agents, as well as the phenomena they might have witnessed. But believe it or not, the Men in Black didn't start with the 1990 comic. Stories of strange men dressed in black suits who show up after UFO sightings go all the way back to the 1950s. Many think that the first Men in Black sighting occurred in 1953 when Albert Bender, a Bridgeport, Connecticut factory worker, was visited by a trio of these strange men. Bender was born in Pennsylvania in 1921, and after being discharged from the Air Force in 1943, he relocated to Bridgeport with his mother and stepfather. Bender was an odd man, to say the least. He filled his living space with an assortment of 20 clocks. every 15 minutes, half hour, and on the hour, his house on 784 Broad Street would resound with the din of chiming bells. But this was just a small part of Bender's eccentricities. He lived in a room in the attic of his stepfather's three-story home. When he entered his late 20s, Bender adorned his attic room with a collection of horror props, plastic skulls, shrunken heads, and his own original horror-inspired art. When friends came over, he enhanced the experience by playing recorded sound effects, such as thunder, sobbing, and hissing noises. Fittingly, he called his attic room his Chamber of Horrors. Today, Bender would be considered obsessive-compulsive. Everything he owned had to be in a specific place, and he could immediately tell if anything was moved even slightly. If they were, he would become highly irritated. In 1950, Bender became obsessed with flying saucers. He collected reports of UFO sightings and met with other people interested in the subject. In 1952, he established a worldwide network of UFO investigators called the International Flying Saucer Bureau, or the IFSB for short. This led Bender to publish his own magazine called Space Review. The IFSB caught the attention of flying saucer disciples across the globe. UFO reports poured into the organization, and Bender spent much of his free time faithfully answering letters that arrived at his home by the sackload. But on the night of July 30, 1952, just a few months after the IFSB was established, Bender received a strange phone call. When he picked up the phone, no one spoke, but he was sure that someone was listening on the other end of the line. Suddenly, the room began to spin, and his head started to throb violently. He quickly hung up the phone, then was forced to lay down for the rest of the day to recover from the incident. A few days later, Bender went to an evening showing of a science fiction film. On his walk home, he began to feel that a hostile figure was following him. When he arrived home and walked upstairs to his attic bedroom, he saw an eerie glow coming from under the doorframe. Flinging the door open, he was overcome by the smell of burning sulfur, and he saw a bright, shimmering object hovering in the center of the room. As soon as he turned on the light, the object vanished. Because of his OCD, Bender could see that some important IFSB files weren't where they should have been. Someone, or something, had been going through his flying saucer material. Another strange event took place in November of 1952 when Bender was at a theater. As the movie played, he became overwhelmed by a sense that he was being stared at by someone sitting in the dark theater. Suddenly, Bender was horrified to see a human-like figure materialize in a nearby seat. It was a well-dressed man in dark clothing with glowing eyes. Bender was once again afflicted by dizziness and nausea, and he was forced to close his eyes to prevent himself from throwing up. When he opened them, the man was gone. But minutes later, the same uneasy feeling came over him, and when he turned around, the same well-dressed man with the glowing eyes was sitting a few rows back, staring menacingly at him. Bender fled the theater and went home. Over the next few months, Bender's dizzy spells continued, and manifestations of entities dressed in dark suits plagued him. The intense odor of sulfur filled his room for days at a time, and he began to develop intense migraines. Then, sometime in July of 1953, Bender was visited in his home by three mysterious men. He would later say all of them were dressed in black clothes. They looked like clergymen, but wore hats similar to Homburg style. The men revealed to Bender the dark truth behind the UFO presence in our world. But they warned him in hushed, stern tones never to reveal what they had told him. If he did, he would die. Before leaving, the men in black confiscated copies of Space Review. They vanished into a yellow mist, and in their wake was the sickening smell of sulfur. Bender was so terrified by the experience that in October 1953, he announced in the pages of his Space Review magazine that he was closing the doors of the IFSB and leaving the flying saucer arena for good. He wrote, "We would like to print the full story in Space Review, but because of the nature of the information, we are sorry that we have been advised in the negative. We advise those engaged in saucer work to please be very cautious." Although Bender's encounter with the Men in Black wasn't made public until 1956, other people began to report run-ins with these strangely dressed men. After a while, a pattern to the encounters began to emerge. These mysterious figures would show up unexpectedly in the lives of UFO witnesses and researchers. Their mission seemed to be to dissuade people from talking about their experiences and to prevent them from seeking more information about them. Obviously, the first thing people notice when these mysterious strangers show up is their odd-looking appearance. They are universally described as wearing black suits, black ties, white shirts, and dress shoes. But reports differ about the condition of their clothing. Some have encountered men in black who are meticulously dressed and whose clothing was unrealistically neat and wrinkle-free. Others say that their black jackets and pants appear soiled and their shoes old and scuffed, and that they were generally unkempt. Some report that the men in black they encountered walked in a very unusual way, moving as if their hips were held together by swivel joints. This gave the impression of a gliding or rocking effect as they walked, often with the torso and legs occasionally moving off in opposite directions. Some witnesses described them as walking as if they were intoxicated. While many men in black are described as having deathly pale skin, others are said to be dark-skinned and foreign-looking, often with oddly slanted eyes. And while some men in black are described as being completely bald, others look as if their hair had been recently shaved and that it was growing back unevenly. Their speech is often reported as being somewhat off. Some speak with strange accents, and their language is often excessively formal and foreign-sounding. Some describe them as speaking very distinctly, either in a monotone, sing-song, or whining voice. Although they sometimes appear alone, they usually travel in pairs or in threes. Another strange thing is that most men in black are said to drive black Cadillacs or large, dark sedans. Some witnesses reported that the cars they drive are old-fashioned models from the 1940s and 50s. While most men in black appear to look human, upon closer inspection, they're clearly not. Many witnesses describe their actions as being robotic, and they react as if they're not of this world. For example, some men in black are said to show surprise and puzzlement at such ordinary items as ballpoint pens and eating utensils. As for their demeanor, they usually seem neither warm and friendly nor evil. They just come across as being neutral. But at the same time, they seem to give off a feeling of being menacing. Some instill fear merely by being in one's presence. Others intimidate with threats of bodily harm, even though there has never been a report of any men in black actually resorting to violence. Although some men in black come across as being aliens in disguise, others seem to simply look like government agents. In the mid-1960s, men in black often identified themselves as military intelligence personnel, usually representing the Air Force. During this time, they often came across as acting like gangsters or international terrorists and spies. But the U.S. government denies having anything to do with these mysterious agents. On February 15, 1967, the Pentagon sent a confidential letter to all intelligence command centers. It informed them to immediately notify the Office of Special Investigations if anyone masquerading as military officers were apprehended after intimidating UFO witnesses. Of course, such a letter could also have been a smokescreen to hide the fact that the agents were part of a secret government agency. One woman swears that she knows for a fact that men in black are real because her father was one. She said that in the 1950s, her father worked in military intelligence, and at one point, his job was to intimidate UFO witnesses, primarily on military bases. He was also ordered to seize any documents associated with UFO sightings and abductions. The woman said that her father and his partner were required to wear black suits, white shirts, and black ties. She said that they also had white handkerchiefs in their jacket pockets. Although this was just their uniform, it also had the secondary purpose of intimidating people. The man told his daughter that at the time he was working as an intelligence agent, there were only 8 men assigned to this task force. The woman said, "A few years ago, he told me about a lot of things that really disturbed me, and I found out that he was privy to information regarding UFOs. My dad is very old now," she said, "and he has dementia, so he's lost the ability to remember anything more about this subject. Interestingly, my father's partner was murdered in the early 1950s. That murder was never solved, so I wonder if it had anything to do with his UFO work." Many people have reported that men in black intimidate UFO witnesses, investigators, and their families. A man who called himself Max Radar, not his real name, who was an associate professor at the University of Denver, reported that he was harassed by men in black for several months after he started giving lectures about UFOs. During this time, his children were stopped on the sidewalk by these same men and warned that their father should stop his UFO lecturing and research. Things got so bad that Dr. Radar had to leave the university for a while to hide with his family. There are several stories of police officers who have chased UFOs in their squad cars who were cornered in garages by men in black. Some officers were strongly advised to retract their statements. Others were told that they did not see what they saw. If a witness happened to photograph a UFO or its occupants, a fact only known to the witness, the men in black showed up unannounced and demanded possession of the photo or negative. Other times, they outright stole the photos. Some of the strangest men in black cases are those where the men show up unannounced in places outside the home. Such was the case involving a 27-year-old who went by the name Michael Elliott. He used that pseudonym in order to protect his identity when talking about his experiences with investigators. In 1980, Mr. Elliott had an experience he never forgot. It happened in mid-November of 1980 while Michael was doing research on flying saucers. One day, he was reading in a nearby university library, and he was sitting alone at a table in a wing of the library. In front of him was a large window, and behind him were 6 stacks of books. Suddenly, without any sound to indicate that someone was behind him, he noticed a man's pant leg out of the corner of his eye. On his feet were rather worn-looking black leather shoes. Then the man moved around the table to a chair opposite where Michael sat and stood silently for a few seconds with his back to the window. Then he sat down, very mechanically, and sat up straight and stiff. Michael looked at the man and noticed that his complexion was dark. He was very thin, almost emaciated, and he had chiseled features. His eyes were hollow and sunken-looking, and his hair was black and greasy. The man wore a black suit that was in serious need of ironing and cleaning, and he had on a white shirt and a black Texan-like string tie. Michael didn't notice it at the time, but later when the man rose to leave, he noticed that the suit was much too large for him, despite his being well over 6 feet tall. As soon as the man sat down, he asked Michael what he was working on, and he told him about his UFO research. The man spoke very articulately and had a vaguely European accent. The two had a brief conversation about flying saucers, but Michael was working, so he really wasn't in the mood to talk to the man. But the man continued questioning Michael. He asked him if he had ever seen a flying saucer. The tone of his question intimated that he suspected that he had seen one. But Michael evaded the question and said that he really wasn't interested in whether flying saucers were physical extraterrestrial craft. He said that he just found the stories about them interesting. When he said this, the man sat up even straighter in his chair and became completely irate. He yelled out, "Not interested? Flying saucers are the most important fact of the century, and you're not interested?" This really caught Michael off guard, and he was beginning to think that the guy was more than just a little crazy. He might even be dangerous. Michael tried to calm the man down, and he suddenly stopped talking. Then he stood up in a very jerky, robotic way, then leaned over the table and placed a hand on Michael's shoulder. "Go well in your purpose," the man said. Then he simply walked away. Around 10 seconds after he was gone, Michael became very frightened, and for the first time, he thought that the man wasn't from our world. He began pacing the library, then after a few minutes, he walked around the stacks to the reference desk. But when he got there, there was no one behind the desk. In fact, there was no one at all in the library. No one was even at the information desk across the room. Now, this was a university library, so it should have been filled with people all day long. But there wasn't a soul around. Michael began to panic, so he quickly ran back to his desk and sat down to try to calm himself down. He was too frightened to leave, so he sat at the table for about an hour. Finally, he gathered his books together and got up to leave. When he got to the front of the library, he was shocked to see that there were two librarians behind each of the two desks. To this day, Michael has no idea who this man was, and why it seemed that no one was in the library that day. One of the oddest Men in Black encounters ever recorded occurred after the famous Solway spaceman photo was taken. On May 24, 1964, fireman Jim Templeton was out with his family enjoying the countryside near the Solway coast in England. They were picnicking in an isolated area called Berg Marsh, and there weren't any other people around. Although the day was bright and sunny, the Templetons noticed that the nearby cows and sheep were behaving strangely. They huddled together the way that they would during a thunderstorm, but the skies were absolutely clear that day. As the family sat on a blanket enjoying their picnic, Jim told his daughter Elizabeth that he wanted to take some pictures of her wearing her new dress. The girl stood up and walked a short way away, and Jim took a few photos of the girl standing in the field. His wife sat on the blanket watching the two of them, and after the photos were taken, they all sat on the blanket together and continued their picnic. That afternoon, after they got home, Jim took the film to be developed at a local chemist shop. When he went to pick them up a few days later, the young woman working at the shop said, "Jim, you have some really nice pictures, but it's a pity that the best one of Elizabeth has been spoiled by that man in the background wearing a spacesuit." Jim thought the girl was joking. He knew that there was no man in any of the shots he took that day because there was no one else around. But when the girl pointed out the figure in the photo to him, he saw exactly what she meant. A strange figure in a white outfit and wearing a helmet with a black visor could be seen standing directly behind his daughter's head. The figure appeared to be wearing a spacesuit. Jim was totally puzzled and a little concerned by the photo. Although he didn't want to make too much of it, he decided to show it to the police to get their opinion. When Superintendent Donald Roy of the Carlisle Police Department saw the photo, he was also perplexed. There was undoubtedly a man standing behind the girl, but the perspective was wrong, impossible even. The girl was clear, but the strange figure was slightly blurred, and it was tilted a bit to one side. It also seemed to be floating, as its feet and legs were nowhere to be seen. The photo puzzled Superintendent Roy so much that he sent it out to the Criminal Investigation Department for analysis. The photo was also analyzed by the Kodak Film Company, who determined that it was not a double exposure or some type of fraudulent image. Meanwhile, a UFO expert who saw the photo thought that perhaps an invisible spacecraft had been on the marsh that day. Maybe the alien spaceman had phased in and out of sight so fast that the human eye couldn't see it, but the fast film shutter captured its image. Other theories were a little more down to earth. One was that Mrs. Templeton had wandered off behind her daughter when the photo was taken, and that the blurred photo just appeared to resemble a spaceman. But the woman insisted that she was sitting on the picnic blanket the whole time that her husband was taking the photos. Not only that, she was wearing a blue dress that day, not a white one. Although the Templetons never wanted publicity, word of the strange spaceman photo was leaked to the press by someone in the police department, and the picture made headlines around the world. Now here's where the men in black come into the picture. At the end of June, a well-spoken man called Mrs. Templeton. He said that he investigated these things and that he'd like to talk to the couple about the unusual photo. The Templetons had spoken to so many people by now about it that they readily agreed, hoping that the man might be able to give them some answers. A few days later, the man came to the house accompanied by another man. The car they arrived in was a black Jaguar, and both were dressed in black suits. One of them quickly flashed an identification card that had something to do with the government, but he put it away so quickly that the Templetons weren't able to see it clearly. During their conversation, the men were very courteous, but at the same time they came across as being cold and aloof. Jim recalled that during the hour or so that he was with them, they never once used names in reference to one another. Instead, they called each other by numbers, number 9 and 11. The men insisted on being taken to the site where the photo was taken, and Jim agreed to take them there. The three of them climbed into the black Jaguar, and Jim told them how to get to the field where he took the photo. When they got there, the men began interrogating Jim and asking him strange questions, such as what the weather was like that day and about the behavior of the wildlife. For some odd reason, they also grilled him about whether there were any ambient sounds, such as wind in the trees or the distant sound of traffic. Then, the men's mood changed suddenly. "Now show us where the man was when you took the photograph," one of the men said. "But there was no man," Jim said. "I told you, I didn't see anyone when I was taking the picture. We were the only ones there that day." "Really?" they said, looking as if they didn't believe him. Jim said later that they seemed to be trying to get him to admit that the photo was a hoax. But he insisted that there was no man there when he took the photo. With that, the two men looked at one another and said, "Oh yeah, right." Then they just marched off across the grass to their car. Jim was so stunned that he stood there for a while, but then started to follow them. But when he was halfway to the car, the men drove off, leaving Jim totally stranded in the marsh. There was no public transportation in the area, and he had to walk 5 miles home. Although the men in black were never seen or heard from again, the story isn't over yet. One of the strangest turns of events was that just days after Mr. Templeton had taken his photograph, a missile test in South Australia was aborted by technicians who reported seeing two men in the firing range. Upon later seeing the Solway spaceman photo on the front page of an Australian newspaper, the technicians were totally stunned, as the figure in the photo looked the same as the figures they saw close to the missile. If men in black are said to show up after people witness UFO sightings, then we should be hearing about more encounters with these mysterious strangers. More and more people are reporting sightings of unusual lights in the sky and odd-looking spacecraft every day. As a matter of fact, I submitted a UFO report to Camp Smith Military Base just last week. I had this really unusual experience. A few nights ago, I was walking out to my driveway to put a trash bag in the garbage can, and I was halfway across the driveway when I noticed this strange blue light hovering over one of the dogwood trees in my backyard. It was about the size of a basketball, and it was surrounded by a kind of milky white aura. I watched it for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden... hold on a minute. Somebody's at the door. I'll be right back. Hi, can I help you?
Mr. Pirro, my colleague and I are very pleased to make your acquaintance. We listen to you regularly on the Happenings of Hauntings podcast.
No, that's Haunted Happenings.
And follow you on the pages of the Facebook. We desire to speak to you of your recent report submitted to the local military base. May we come in, please?
Sure, come in. Watch out for the... cat. Sorry about the mess. I wasn't expecting company. Have a seat. Can I offer you anything? Here, have a thin mint.
Thank you. Oh my, if these mints were any thinner, they would cease to exist. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, what was it you wanted to talk to me about?
Please, it would be advisable for you to cease your recording device at this time.
Oh, no problem. Just give me a minute. I was just finishing up telling my listeners about...
On second thought, Mr. Pirro, leave it for now. It will be taken care of by me and my colleague. Now, if you would be so kind as to please look directly at the red light at the tip of this device, this won't take more than a second or two. Just look directly at the red light.
Sure thing. Wow, that's bright. Hey, by the way... Nice suits. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow me and leave a comment. To contact me, use the email address listed in the program notes. I'm Barry Pirro, and this is Haunted Happenings.
Thank you.